Okay, good morning, everyone. So this week's shiur from Maseches Megillah, the weekly shiur from Maseches Megillah, is dedicated by Gary and Toby Greenstein in memory of their dear son Yomi, Yosef Menachem, Zichrono Livracha, Ben Gershom, who grew up here in the YPC. And the weekly breakfast is sponsored by the Heilige Heilige Bagel Munch, Le'ilui Nishmas, Shimon Ben Zev, and Fega Bas Chaim. Okay, should I start? I feel like we're a little loose. Okay, the last line of Yud Ches Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, Hayak Suba Bissam. So the Mishnah was detailing in the very beginning of the Perek the different items that you can use to write the Megillah and to write the Megillah on. So the Mishnah said, Suba Bissam, Uve Sikra, Uve Kumus, Uve Kankantum. If you write with any of these types of inks, al haniyar, al adiftara, on paper, on some sort of paper, on some sort of parchment, lo yotza, ashtei ksuba ashuris, al hasefer uvidiyo. Until you've written the ksav of ashuris, which is the block Hebrew letters that we're all familiar with, al hasefer, and you write it on a sefer, which we're going to explain what that means, uvidiyo, and you write it with ink. So the Gemara says, what is sam? Ayaksuva b'sam. So the Gemara says, sam is sama, some sort of ink. Sikra. Omar Rabba Barbarchana, sikrosa shema. It's also some sort of type of ink. Kumum, kumus kuma. Some sort of sap from a tree. Kankantum. This kankantum is charsa de ushchepi diftera. Some sort of, it looks as black as like a shoemaker's type of black. Diftera, sorry, what's diftera? The maliach, the kamiach, it's like salted and it has flour, velo offits, but doesn't have gallnuts, whatever those are. Niyar, and what's niyar? Niyar we mean is mechka, some sort of like papyrus. So these are the different materials that the Gemara suggests, but basically you have to write a Megillah with Dio, on klaf, with sirtut, and those are the Megillahs that we're all, Baruch Hashem, familiar with. Ashtei ksuva ashuris. How do you know it needs to be written in ashuris? After all, we had a whole discussion about the Megillah being written in different languages. Dechsev kich savam ukizmanom. Right? That's what the Megillah says. Kimu v'kibula yehudim aleyim v'alzaram. We accepted the Megillah on us. And everybody, to make these 2 days, days of Purim, kich savam, like they're written. Uchizmanam b'chol shana v'shana, every single year. So the Gemara says, al asef kich savam uchizmanam. So it has to be as it was written, just like it was written in Ashuris then, it's written in Ashuris now. Al asefer uvidiyo, thank you so much. On a sefer and with ink, minolan, how do you know that? Ifsia ksiva ksiva. We make a gzeres shava. Ksiv hacha, it says over here in Esther, v'tichtov Esther amalka. Right, that's what it says. V'tichtov Esther Amalka Bas Avichai Mordechai Yehudi is kol tokif l'kayim esigeres apurim azos hashani hashenis. They wrote this whole Megillah. V'ksiv hasam, and it says in Yirmiyahu, v'yomer lahem baruch mipiv yikra elai es kol hadvarim ha'elev ani kosev ala sefer badiyo. So when Yirmiyahu was hiding out from the evil king, so he wrote Sefer Eicha, or Sefer Kinos, right? He wrote Sefer Eicha. So he gave that sefer to Baruch, his trusty assistant, and Baruch had to share that sefer with the king, with Klal Yisrael, that everybody should understand. Sefer Eicha was written before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It was a prophetic accounting of what would ultimately happen, right? And that was supposed to shock the evil king into tshuva, and so it uses this word of ksiva. Right? Ani kosev al hasefer bidiyo. He wrote it on sefer with dio, with permanent type of ink. Okay, now we're at a very important Mishnah, a Shiloh that does absolutely come up. Bizman hazeh, probably much more than it ever came up in the times of the Mishnah. When this Mishnah was written, it was like one of those Mishnayos that we read in like, Taharos. Like, what does this have to do with anything? How many people are traveling between one day of Purim, place to place? But today, as you know, or you should know, that everybody should know where their kids are on Purim in Eretz Yisrael. Because Baruch Hashem, there's a lot of Hislavos to observe Purim multiple times, right? Since we know all the cities outside the walled cities are observing Purim on the 14th, and then inside the walled cities, like Yerushalayim, they're observing Purim on the 15th, and if you add a Shabbos in there, you know, you get your Purim Mishulosh. So there's a lot of mitzvahs going on. The kids go from place to place that they could give Matanos Avyonim as much as possible. They could hear the Megillah as much as possible. And maybe also a shtickle L'chaim here and there. Too much, as much as possible. So that's the Shiloh. You're moving from place to place. It's not so pushit. So what happens? So says the Mishnah, Ben Ir Shehalach L'krach. So this is the code that you have to remember to follow this Mishnah and Gemara. Ir refers to a regular city, right? A normal, regular city. Krach refers to a walled city. So what happens? That Bein Ir Shehalach L'Krach, someone from a regular city who's obligated to hear the Megillah on the 14th day of Adar, right? He goes to a Krach, he goes to a walled city. Or Bein Krach Shehalach L'Ir, or a Bein Krach finds himself in a regular city. So what do they do? When do they? So there are a number of options, right? One option is, so we haven't gotten to where, let's assume they're going to be where they are for the foreseeable future, right? They're not going back and forth. They just find themselves in a different place. So one option is you join, you know, you went in Rome, right? Do like the Romans, right? So you join whatever the place where you are. The other option is you observe your minhag where you are, differently than where everybody is, since that's really what's Purim for you. You don't live in this city, right? And the Gemara is going to discuss how long do you have to live in a walled city to be considered part of a walled city, right? You don't live in this city. This is not your city. Your house is in a regular city. Your house is in Beit Shemesh. Your in-law's house is in Beit Shemesh, Nebuch, right? Your friend's houses are all in Beit Shemesh. You know, everything's ready to go, you know, and you just happen to be in Yerushalayim. So what's the din? So the Gemara said, the Mishnah says, it depends. Im asid lachzor limikomo, if you're going to return to where your actual place is, kore kimikomo, then you read kimikomo, like your place. Rashi says, kechovas mikomo ben ir be'arbaasar ben krach b'chamishasar. You read like your place, but where you are, right? Not that you have to leave, but you leave like your place where you are. So you have to find the 14th Adar Megillah reading in Yerushalayim, since you plan to return. And if you're not going to go back, then Kore Imahen. We're going to see what that means, go back. So we have to clarify that. The Gemara then, the Mishnah then addresses a completely different subject. Mehechen Kora Adam is a Megillah v'yotze ba. The Mishnah wants to know, how much of the Megillah do you have to hear in order to be Yotzei Kriyas HaMegillah? You have to hear the whole thing? Maybe there are certain parts that are more core than other parts, right? If you're 8 years old, the Megillah begins at the beginning of Yitz?
Third
Perek. Third Perek, right? With the first Haman. And ends at the end of pretty much the ninth Perek, right? Right? With the last Haman. Everything else is just boring things adults do to make the religion miserable, right? So what do you have? So how much of the Megillah do you really have to hear? So Yotzidichavos, Rabbi Meir Omer Kula. Rabbi Meir says you got to hear the whole thing. Rabbi Huda Omer Miish Yehudi. You have to hear from the pasuk of Ish Yehudi Ayah B'Shushan Abira, right? When Mordechai joins the story. Rabbi Yossi Omer Me'achar Hadvarim Ha'ele. Right? That is actually at the beginning of Yitz, the third parak. So that Rabbi Yossi is the champion of the kids, right? Achar Dvarim Ha'era, Gidal HaMelech Achashverosh Es Haman. Very good. So the ascension of Haman. So we're going to see what's these three different approaches. Okay, let's go back to the first discussion. Omar Rava, says Rava, Lo Shanu. So let's follow here. When we learned that a Ben Krach, that a resident, a citizen of a walled city that goes to a regular city, and right, and is there for the earlier date of Purim, right, that they are reading Kimikomo, Lo Shanu Ela Sha'asid Lachzor Belele Yodalid. That assumes that they're going to go home on the night of the 14th, meaning they find themselves breaking the fast, and in Beit Shemesh, on the night of the 14th. But after that, so when the Chovas HaMegillah takes hold, right? Seisach Kochavim comes and it's Purim. So it's a Chiyuv Megillah. So and you're planning to return back to Yerushalayim. When are you planning to return back to Yerushalayim? Says the Gemara. You're planning to return back to Yerushalayim the night of the 14th. So you're going to wake up when the Chova of the next day of Megillah already in Yerushalayim where it's not Purim. It's not Purim till that night, right? So aval enos, so that's what it means, osid lachsor. So if that's the story, then you don't, even though you're in Beit Shemesh for Purim night, and everyone else is dressed up as Batman and Robin and Kobe Bryant and Mamish, like, you know, and everybody's like completely full of Purim, your Purim is not till the next day. You wait till you go home. Aval ein, you don't, it's not just that you wait till you go home. That's already Machlokas Rishonim, not a Machlokas Rishonim, but already Machlokas Rishonim, whether or not you have to do more Purims or less Purims, but it's that you don't have to hear Megillah that night, even though you're in a city full of Jews celebrating Purim, right? Haval enos ed lachzor b'leili arba'asar, but if you're not going to go home on the 14th, kore imahen, then you have to read with them, even though you may, even though it's not really Purim for you, right? Even though it's not really Purim for you. What happens then if you go home in the daytime and you get back to your walled city, Yerushalayim, and now the sun sets and everyone in Yerushalayim is dressed up, you know, ready to go for Purim night. So that becomes a machlokas rishonim. Whether or not, when you observed Purim outside your walled city, you were yotze your Purim, it's like a chovas gavra here, and you're just, that was your Purim, or whether or not that was your Purim because you were misyaches to the community that was celebrating Purim on that day, because you created some sort of kviyas there. But now that you're back to where you are, the chiyuv kicks in again. And so therefore you'd be chayuv to do Purim again.
Mermelstein's require 2 days Purim in Eretz Yisrael.
I thought also in Chutzlaretz, a Yom Tov Sheni Shogolius, you know, we're not even sure which day's Purim. Maybe, and we're not really sure which day Shushan Purim. So really, three or four days.
What happens if it's the other way around? If you're a resident of a walled city,
right?
But you're planning on, like, you're outside for the 14th of there, and then you're outside of the walled city for the 15th.
Oh, can you skip Purim altogether?
Well, no. Which one is it? Are you supposed to keep the one? Well, you can't keep the 15th. So if you know,
right, correct.
So then you have to.
Then you're with the 14th, right. Correct. But there's a whole discussion. Can you skip Purim? A discussion in the. Can you avoid Purim? See, no one would think to do that. As opposed to many other mitzvot, which people do try to, right? You know, like, can I get them?
Why would you want to skip it?
Amar Rav, I really hope I get that daf. Amar Rav, I'm going to have to trade with you, even Rabbi Palmer. Amar Rav, mino amin Allah, how do you know this? Dechsev, alkeina yehudim haprozim ayoshim ba'ore haprozos. The pasuk says in the Megillah that the Jews of these cities that dwelled in these cities. Michti, what does that mean? Kosova Yehudim HaProzim. It says the Prozim Jews, the city Jews. Lamele lemichta vayoshim ba'orei HaProzos. Why does it all have to say again that live in the Orei HaProzos? HaKamash Melon, that there's a new category. Diparuz ben yomo nikraparuz. That someone who's part of a city, a particular city for one day, if they're part of its city for that day in its totality, they're called part of that city. Paruz, sa'ashchan paruz, so that's true. Paruz refers to the unwalled cities. Mukof minalan, how do you know that somebody who's part of the walled city also can have a din only for one day, right? So svarahu, midiparuz ben yomo kari paruz, mukof ben yomo kari mukof. If you can be a alien resident for one day in one type of city, you could be it for another day in another type of city. But Amar Rava, says Rava, what about the following case? Ben Kfar, if we remember from the very first Mishnah, that those that lived in the villages, they were allowed to push Purim all the way back before the 14th, to the Yom HaKnisa, to the market day, to the Monday or Thursday, in order to encourage them to go into the cities and sell the people in the cities, right, all the things that they need so that they could be able to celebrate Purim. So if they had to celebrate Purim on a random day, then they wouldn't be able to happen. So they would celebrate Purim in that city. So the Gemara says, "Biyama Rava, what happens if a Ben Kfar that observed Purim on the 13th or the 14th or the 12th, right? What happens? Shehalach Le'ir, he finds himself in a regular city." So the Gemara says, "Ben Kach u Ben Kach Kore Imahen." If he ends up in a real city, I shouldn't say a real city, we sound like New Yorkers, right? If he ends up Nebuch in Brooklyn for Purim, so no matter what, he has to hear the Megillah. Why? My time. Hi, Kibnei Ir, Boy Lemikre. Because these people, right, really they should be reading the Megillah on the 14th. They're normal city people. And it was the Rabbanan who were Mekel and gave them the license to celebrate Purim a little bit earlier in order to preserve the economy and the marketplace and the plan. So Hani Mili, that's only true ki isei beduchte. It's only true if then they find themselves in their own town on the 14th, right? In other words, they already celebrated Purim earlier when they were in the big city, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened. The market people, they would go, right? You live in a little shtetl, and you'd go to the big city, and even though it wasn't Purim, you'd chop a minyan, and you get together, and you celebrated Purim. And then you went back to your kfar. What happened on the 14th? Nothing happened on the 14th. It's not Purim for you on the 14th. You were given the opportunity to celebrate Purim earlier. But if you find yourself in the city on the 14th, so this was all a kula. So if you're in your village, then you don't have to celebrate Purim. But if you're mamish in the city, then he has to go ahead and do it. So Abaye asks the kasha, we have this memra, ben krach shaholach le'ir, ben kach uven kach kore kemikomo, that somebody from a walled city who finds themselves in a regular city, no matter what their intention is, in regards to returning, they read like their makom. So the Gemara says, "Ben krach sokadaitach." What do you mean? Be'im asid lafsar talya milsa. This was all totally on whether or not you're going to go back. So elalav ben kfar. So the Gemara says, "No. We correct it. It really was the Bryson meant to say ben kfar, who was already makdim Purim and read on the Yom HaKnisa." And then finds themselves in a city the night of the 14th. The lav terutzi mitartes tani kore imohen. And once we're correcting the brisa about what the circumstances were, we correct it regarding the din. And the din is kore not kimikomo, but the din is kore imohen. And that confirms that is consistent with what we said before. Mehechan kore adam es ha-megillah. From where does a person read the Megillah? So Tanya, so says a Braisa. So the Braisa adds another Shita that wasn't in our Mishnah, and that is the Shita of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai omer mi balayla hahu. From the Pasuk of balayla hahu. What's the Pasuk of balayla hahu? Balayla hahu nodo shnas ha-melech. That's the part where the king couldn't sleep. And that, from the narrative standpoint, is kind of the turning point of the Megillah, because it is being awakened at that, right? I think there's a minig to even use the nusach of Yomim Noraim on that HaMelech. Do you do that?
To change the tune.
Do you do that? It doesn't do that because it doesn't involve a hat or jumping up and down. But
retire him.
But no, we're not going to retire yet. Yitz is not a show. It's already. Yitz is going to be reading Adar Rishon, Adar Sheni, Adar Shlishi. So from Balailahu, that's one of the turning points where all of a sudden he can't sleep and he calls for the Sefer HaZichronos, and that's when he discovers that he didn't give the thing to Mordechai, and he calls in Haman, and the whole story kind of takes a turn. Already at that moment. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan v'kula mikra echad darshu. These different shitos and opinions about really what this is a debate about is what is really the essence of the Megillah. What's really the driving lesson that's supposed to really make an impact of the Megillah itself. So there's a pasuk batichtov Esther Amalka uMordechai Yehudi es kol tokef. They write, what does Esther Malka and Mordechai Yehudi do? They write, says the Pasuk, Where's that pasuk? Al ken kar li yom ma'ela purim al shem apur al kil kol dvar megeres hazos and maru al kachu ma'igi aleim. That is not the pasuk. I have it here. Okay. So what's so they write the Megillah, and it's on the entire strength of the story. Says Rashi, "Lekayim migeres apurim al tokef ikpid lahazkir." In other words, it's the power of the story. Tokef means power, right? It's the power of the story. Manda amar kula, the one that says. So whose power are we focused on? So the one that says you have to read the whole thing. Tokef shel Achashverosh. It's all about the power of Achashverosh, meaning the fact that a king from the very, very Vayibimei Achashverosh to the very, very end, this king whose self-perception that he is running this kingdom, that he's in charge of the world, that rests with him the destiny of the Jewish people, and the whole story of Purim is showing you who really is the king, right? Who really is running the world? Tokvo shel Achashverosh. So we have to start from the very beginning. This is not just some sort of anti-Semitic plot that ended up, being exposed and discovered by Israeli intelligence, and everybody got saved. This is more about the fact that there are leaders in the world whose arrogance and sense of self-importance are very grand and very dramatic, and they believe that they're in charge of the Malchus. But as we know, at each step in the Purim story, it's really HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's really a story of, I wouldn't just say Hashkachas Hashem, it's really a story of Kol Kedot Tzinyanim, understanding who is it that really runs the world. Umando Amar Me'ish Yehudi, Tokvo Shel Mordechai. The one that says from Ish Yehudi, it's really about the power of Mordechai. It's about the power of leadership to effectuate change in the Jewish people, not to accept the status quo of the diaspora Jewish community and its attitudes towards assimilation and Shmiras HaMitzvos as a given. Not to look at the American Jewish scene and say to ourselves, there's a 60-70% assimilation rate, and on the other side of the spectrum, we got Jews going to prison on the front page of the New York Times. We have assimilation, we have tremendous Chil Hashem, we have all sorts of problems and all sorts of issues. So that's it. We just succumb and allow ourselves to be defined by whatever the circumstances of Galus are. No, Mordechai Yehudi. Mordechai stands up, and he, whether he provokes Haman, or he instigates Haman, or he reacts to Haman, whatever it is, he then galvanizes the whole Jewish people. He orchestrates how Esther is going to have her own moment of leadership. It's all about our ability to change the course. It's not just about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's running the world. It's about recognizing that it's within our hands to effectuate history, to shape history, to move history, not to the exclusion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu controlling history, but within that framework we can make an impact, we can make a difference. And the one that says that it's Achar Dvar Ma'ela, it's the strength of Haman. So the story of Purim is really a story of Jewish survival. Just a story of understanding that in every generation there's going to be a personality that is out there to destroy Am Yisrael. When the rise of anti-Semitism is being, greeted with shock, and I can't believe there's more anti-Semitism, that there's a Haman in every generation that's part of the reality of Golus, and it's up to us to resist, to stand up to confront that reality. The real story of Purim is the ability to discover the miracles that exist in everyday life, that there are, that Hashkacha is not only manifest in experiences like Parshas Beshalach, in experiences like the Eser Makos, in experiences like the splitting of the sea, in the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, and the fall of Yericho, that Hashkachas Hashem Balayla Ahu, that you think that everything is headed in one direction, you have no idea. The different things that are going on behind the scenes. There's a very famous story of Eddie Jacobson. You guys know the Eddie Jacobson story? They once brought all his grandkids to the AIPAC conference. Mm-hmm. So Eddie Jacobson was a business partner with a man named Harry Truman, right? It's Harry Truman. And they were business partners, and they got along, and they whatever. And when they were trying to get the State of Israel declared, so the big question was going to be whether or not so Ben-Gurion was taking a tremendous risk by declaring the state, that a lot of people thought was a big mistake. In fact, some, I think we've discussed this, some of the poskim write that one of the main nisim that happened was the fact that he did this. He was a very brilliant strategic mind, Ben-Gurion, and the fact that he did this was totally counter to anything logical, because if you declare the state and then everyone says, no, no, you're not, then where do you go from there? You're with nobody. You have nothing. So to us, it's so poshut that there should be a state of Israel. But if he came out and said, and obviously the vote that mattered the most was whether or not the United States was going to recognize the state of Israel. So they sent Chaim Weizmann to try to meet with Harry Truman, and he couldn't get an appointment. He couldn't get a meeting. So it turns out, I don't remember the exact details of the story, how they reached Eddie Jacobson, but Eddie Jacobson had like free pass into the Oval Office because they were friends, they were business partners for many, many years. So he went up to him and he pointed to some statue on his desk and he said, you know, Harry, who's your hero? And it's Thomas Jefferson, I don't remember exactly, I don't want to misquote. He said, this is my hero. And he says, well, my hero is this man, and I want you to give him 10 minutes. And so he comes in and he makes his case, and then Mirtz Hashem, one of the stops this summer with Mirtz Hashem was driving across the country. So one of our stops is the Truman Library. I heard they have a lot of stuff on what's going on. It's in the middle of nowhere. So the so Tochvo Shel Neis. So it's the actual, it's the strength of the miracle itself. It's recognizing Mibalaila Ahu. It's recognizing that you have no idea what's going on behind closed doors that has ultimate and dramatic impact on the Jewish people. You have no idea. You have no concept. So Rav Huna Omar Me'achas. Rav Huna says from a different pasuk. So this pasuk is in Esther. And what did they see? And what happened to them? So what is that? Mandomar Kula, the one that says all of it. What did Achashverosh see? She used the kelim in the Beis Hamikdash. Al kacha on that. What is it? What did he do? Mishum dechash v'shivim shanim v'lo ifruk. Because he made a cheshbon that the 70 years were up and that Klal Yisrael wasn't redeemed, so God must have given up on them. My gialeim dekatov Vashti. And what resulted? He ended up, Vashti got killed because of that party. Uman domer mi'ish Yehudi ma'ra Mordechai war Mordechai sidichni b'Haman. He caused Haman to be jealous. Al kacha deshavi nashi avod azara. Because Haman equated himself to Avodah Zarah. Magi aleihem this charish nisa, and that ultimately resulted in the miracle. Umando amar me'achar dvar ma'ele umara. What did they see? Haman shniskana bechol ayhudim al kacha mishum, that Haman was jealous or wanted to rule over all of the Jews. Al kacha mishum de Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachav. Mordechai wouldn't bow and wouldn't prostrate himself. They ended up hanging him. From that night, what happened? Achashverosh asked for the Sefer HaZichronos. Al kocha, what did that lead to? That they ended up, she ended up inviting Haman Bahadei with Achashverosh to a party. That resulted in the whole miracle, in turning the whole thing around. Okay. Amar Rav Chelbo, Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya, Amar Rav, Halacha Kedivrei Ya'omer, Kula. So the halacha is that you have to hear the entire Megillah. La'afilu l'manda Amar, according to the manda Amar Me'ish Yehudi, that you can only hear from Ish Yehudi. Sricha Shetiei Ksuva Kula. It still has to be from an entirely written Megillah, meaning the obligation to hear this story may only be from Ish Yehudi, but that doesn't mean you can read from a Megillah that starts from by Ish Yehudi. The Megillah has to exist in its totality. V'amar Rav Chelbo, Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya, Amar Rav, Megillah Nikra Sefer, a Megillah is called a Sefer, V'nikra Igeres, and it's also called an Igeres, it's also called a letter. Nikra Sefer, it's called a Sefer, Shim Tafra Bechute Pishton Psula. that if you try to tie it with linen thread, it's pasul, just like a Sefer Torah. V'nikras igeres, but in certain ways, it's not a Sefer Torah. It's called an igeres. It's called a letter. Shem hitel ba shlosha chute gidin ksheira. That if you only tie a Sefer Torah has to be tied all the way up when the Urios meet each other. The Megillah could be tied at thirds, right? A little stitch here, a little stitch here, a little stitch here. Amar Rav Nachman Vashu Meshuloshin, as long as they're equal in thirds. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So it's interesting, right? That in certain ways the Megillah is comparable to a Sefer Torah. It has its place in Tanakh. It's part of the Svarim of Tanakh. It lives as one of the components of our Torah Shebichtav, of our written legacy. And in other ways, it's an igeres. It's meant to not just exist as a text. It's meant to also exist. What's an igeres? Igeres is like a letter. It's meant to also be relevant. It's meant to also be read as a charge. It's a section of Tanakh that's not supposed to just be studied as history or as legacy. It's meant to animate us today. It's a relevant, it's ke'ilu, and that's what we read it as an igeres, right? When they're halachas, then if you notice, right before Megillah reading, they unroll the whole thing and they fold it over. It's read like an igeres, and there are times we hold it up and you read it like an igeres. Igeres is like a letter. Why? Because we're trying to say that the story of Purim is not just about something that happened thousands of years ago. The story of Purim is the unfolding story of the Jewish people today. The notion that we're under the dominion of others, the notion that it takes the koach ha-tfila, the koach ha-tshuva, and the role of advocacy and leadership and courage, men and women, and all the different elements of the Purim story in order to bring the Jewish people to a space of hatzalah. That is something that's as relevant today as it was in the days of Purim. So we don't just, it's not only Parshas Vayishlach. We just we learn a lesson that's relevant to today, but the story is a story of antiquity. No, the story of Purim, it's alive and it's beating in every generation. Every generation has an Achashverosh, it has a Haman, it has a Mordechai, it has an Esther. You have to see your experience, what happens to the Jewish people, as a constant experience, the everlasting Purim. We'll get into another time a very interesting statement in the Rambam. I think it's in the Rambam, that all of the different holidays are asud li batel, except for the holiday of Purim, right? Which is difficult to understand, right, what that means. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, akare b'megillah, aksuva b'daksuvim. What happens if you have a scroll and it's got lots of Tanakh on the scroll, right? Many svarim, and from it you want to read the Megillah. So lo yatsa, that doesn't work. Amar Rava says Rava lo amronela de lo mechasra umaisra. That's only if you didn't make the, says Rashi, arucha mishara klafim lemala o lemata o tsara me'en v'yesh la heker la'atzma. It's only if you didn't do something to the klaf to make a clear indication that this section of this larger scroll is different than the rest of the scroll. But if you did that, then even if you read it from within the scroll, then but about mechaser or meiser purisa leslan, but it's not a problem. Levi bar Shmuel abakakari kamed Rabbi Yehuda. Levi bar Shmuel read before Rabbi Yehuda the Megillah haksuva bein haksuvim from a Megillah that was written in this way. Amar Lei said to him, "Arei amru akari Megillah ksuvim eksorim lo yotza." We said that somebody who reads this way is not yotzei. So he disagrees. Amar Rav Chia bar Abba Amar Rav Yochanan Akari b'Megillah Aksuva bein Aksuvim lo yotza umacho lo amucha. So he says we have a tradition that yes, that was the din, but he lessened it a little bit. Why? B'tzibur shanu. This is a din only in reading for the tzibur, but if for a yachid to read it, it would be acceptable. V'Amar Rav Chia bar Abba Amar Rav Yochanan Shiur atofar alacha l'Moshe miSinai. There is a din that when you sew up a Sefer Torah, you leave the top unsewn. You leave a little give at the top, right? So umachu la amucha v'lo amru ala kadesh lo yikra. He says. So originally the idea was this is halacha l'mosh misen. This is a din doraisa. So then he lessened the tradition on this din as well. That no, this was actually only exer derabanan, so that it shouldn't tear. Why would leaving a piece less stitched mean it wouldn't tear? So because when you leave a little bit of give, then if you pull a little hard, it just kind of, right? The thing's torn all the way up. And this way, like for example, let's say we were to lift Hagva and it were to tear, right? It'll tear down the seam. It's not going to rip in the if everything is absolutely tight and for some reason you're rolling, you're pulling, you're lifting, whatever it is, and there's no give anywhere, then you're in a much more precarious situation. So says the Gemara, Kedei Shelo Yikra. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Av Amar Rabbi Yochanan Yimalei Mishtayer B'Me'ora She'amad Ba'Moshe Ve'Eliyahu K'malei Nekav Mechad Sadkis L'Hoy Yicholu Lamod Mifnei Ha'Ora. When Moshe Rabbeinu and Eliyahu both had the opportunity to exist within a cave and have the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu pass by them. And there was a tiny little hole left open, the size of a small needle, that allowed them to see this light. And if it would have been any more than that needle, they would have been overwhelmed and destroyed by the light. She'nemar, as the Pasuk says, Ki lo yira'ani ha'adam v'chai. Because nobody gets to see me and live. So what does that mean, right? What does it mean that Hashem, right? So Moshe asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu that I want to see you. What does that mean? Moshe's relationship with Hashem was very different than any other human being and than any other Navi. The Rambam delineates a number of different ways in which Moshe Rabbeinu's Nebuah was very different. Moshe spoke to a Kadosh Baruch Hu panim el panim. All other Nevi'im were in an altered state of consciousness. Moshe was completely alert. All other Nevi'im were just contacted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu had the ability to reach out. So there are a number of different differences between the Nevuah of Moshe and the rest of the Nevi'im. What are the purpose of these differences? Because the role that Moshe played, all the other Nevi'im were a conduit for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to send a message to the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu was the conduit for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to send the Torah, Dvar Hashem. So there's an absolute requirement for us to know that everything Moshe gave us was entirely authentic and entirely from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not editorialized in any way by Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu's Koach HaNevuah was very, very different than any other Navi, and his whole personality eventually almost receded into his role as the leader of the Jewish people. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu is, by the end, what's the accolade? He's Eved Hashem. That's it. There's nothing else to say about Moshe. And even in Yehoshua, say for Yehoshua, when they refer back to Moshe, he's Moshe Eved Hashem. He even has to separate from his family. Why is it to separate from his family? Salvechik says it's a one-time example in all of Jewish history because Moshe Rabbeinu could not exist as an independent entity. Because Moshe Rabbeinu had to be this, just like almost like a tube, that allowed a Kadosh Baruch Hu to reach the Jewish people. So you imagine this kind of relationship with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a natural reach to try to understand the larger universe plan, to try to understand the larger, you know, what it is, like what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing here, why different things happen, why the world plan unfolds the way it unfolds. So Hashem says to Moshe, you can't see my face, you could see my back, I'll pass before you, you could see. So the Gemara says, he sees a tiny little needle of the light. So what does that mean? Because anybody who sees the light can't live. So you read that pasuk and you think it means, okay, because like the light's so strong, it'll like zap you, you have like this image at the Kedusha, so that's not what it means. Right, so that's what you think, it's overwhelming. So the real answer is, it's not just that it's overwhelming, it's that to know God, by definition, means you can no longer be a physical being. A physical being is characterized by the elements of our physicality, which means we're temporal, we're restricted by time and space, we see things, you know, in individual dimensions. To see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can't be a chai in this world anymore. Because by definition, your physicality cannot hold what this larger reality is. So Moshe and Eliyahu, they want to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem puts them in a cave and he says, I'll pass by and you'll see a tiny, tiny little glimpse of light. So what is it that they saw? They saw that there is a light That's all they saw. They saw that there is a larger plan, that there is a that which we work our entire life to be able to internalize, that even though we experience our lives in such a way that we don't understand how God is running the world, and sometimes it's incomprehensible what happens in this world, totally incomprehensible, but what do we try to tell ourselves? There's some sort of larger plan. We don't understand it, but that's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's our emunah. That's our faith. That's our belief. Moshe and Eliyahu were zocha to see that that is a reality, but not to see the reality itself. Because a human being cannot see that reality itself. Right? The revelation of why things happen the way they do is not a logical answer to our questions, right? We often think, we don't understand why do bad things happen to good people? So there's a plan and we don't understand it. It's not that we don't understand it because it's a very, very complicated physics problem. But if we were smart enough, we would understand it. Well, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu explains it logic, he's going to be like, oh, you didn't get it? Let me explain it to you. See, I had to do this here and this here and this here and this here and this here. And then we're like, oh, now I get it. It's not a rational, satisfying answer. It's a level of existence and reality that transcends what's rational. It's a level of reality that transcends what's rational. It's what sends a parent into a burning building to save their child at the expense of their own life. It's not a rational decision. That's a visceral, just, that transcends. That's not, they don't evaluate the situation. That's a reality that exists. If you were to ask them, why did you do that? They're not going to be able to cheshbon out, I did it for this and I did it for that, because you'll be able to, right? Why do people do, sometimes people act beyond what's rational in service of something higher. There is a higher level of existence that a human being cannot perceive and cannot understand, and that's what it means that we can't be a chai. It's not that we can't take it, it's that it's not the same type of reality. It's not the reality of what it means to be physical. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mai dechsiv aleihem kechol hadvarim asher diber Hashem imachem bahar, that Hashem spoke all these different things in Sefer Dvarim. Hashem gave the luchos, shnei luchos avanim, written be'etzpa elokim, and on them all of the words that he spoke on the har mitocha esh beyom ha-kohol. Right? These are the second luchos. Melamed shehiru ha-kadosh baruch hu le-moshe. This teaches us that Hashem showed Moshe dikduke Torah v'dikduke sofrim. The minutia of Torah and the minutia of sofrim, which in the Mefarshim say, Uma shahasofrim asidin lichadesh, umay nihu mikra megillah. Hashem showed Moshe all of the things that would forever be interpreted from the Torah, that would ultimately come out. And what specifically did he show him? He showed him mikra megillah. And this Gemara is a fascinating Gemara. Listen, we're in the parshios of Kabbalah Satorah right now, right? We just finished parshas Yisro Mishpatim. What did Moshe really get up there, right? What did he receive? So the Gemara discusses what exactly he received, what exactly he didn't receive, but there are conflicting Gemaras, or seemingly conflicting Gemaras, about whether or not how much of the wisdom that would ultimately be interpreted in the Torah was Moshe privy to on Sinai. Some Gemaras, like our Gemara in Megillah, and other Gemaras as well, and other Midrashim, seem to indicate that Moshe was told everything. So the sermon that I have not written for next week's parsha yet, right? So that sermon was told to Moshe Rabbeinu, mistama without the jokes, but possibly, very possibly with the jokes, we're not sure, right? That drasha was given to Moshe Rabbeinu already in Har Sinai, it's in, right? However, we have other Gemaras which seem to indicate that there is a tremendous amount of independence that we enjoy in being Mechadesh things. We have the famous Gemara in Menachos that Moshe Rabbeinu was transported to the Shir of Rabbi Akiva and didn't understand a word he was saying, right? Until he said, it's all Allah, Moshe Misinai. And Moshe's like, okay, thumbs up, right? You know, I know, that's shout out, right? Maral discusses what that's even talking about, right? So what is it? Is everything given to Moshe? Or is everything not given to Moshe? So there are different interpretations, there are different understandings of how to understand this. So some say, yeah, Everything was given, this is Tosfos Yom Tov in his Hakdama. Everything was given to Moshe. Everything. Even your rabbi's drasha for next Shabbos was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. However, he didn't pass it all on. The Shbaruch Hu gave it to him, he put it in the world, but then it's up to everyone else to figure it out. Why would he do that? Right? Why are we leaving it up to everyone to figure out? Why didn't he just give it all to us? Then I don't have to prepare. Like right? Then I just open the drasha manual and we'll be done. So it's like what?
Like the baby in the womb.
Excellent. How'd you know that? It's exactly what he quotes. Like the Gemara in Nida that says that when a baby's in a womb, the baby learns Kol HaTorah Kula. Then the baby comes out and the Malach hits the baby over here and you forget everything, right? So, and then what do you need to learn it all again? Rabbis, right? So who made that? So what is that Gemara talking about? So the Mefarshim say that all Kol HaTorah Kula has been imprinted on a person. There is like an impression that's on a person, but it's not filled in. And we have to spend our whole life working hard, and that's why when we learn, sometimes there's a certain sense of familiarity or resonance or a certain sense of intuition that kind of kicks in, because there's a primordial internal, you know, reservoir of knowledge that just has to be reached, that just has to be activated, that just has to be. And that's why Kosh Baruch Hu put us in this world, to work hard at learning and to work hard at developing those ideas. That's the Tosfos Yom Tov. But the Dor Revi talks about a different idea, and that is that it's not that all the data was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Not all the data. But rather, what was given to Moshe Rabbeinu? The Koach HaChidush. In other words, everybody's ability to be Mechadesh something ultimately has its origins in that original encounter between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This religion is not, as some philosophers have described, some Jewish philosophers have described, which is very controversial and topic for another time. There were some really strong confrontations and conferences between Rav Lichtenstein and some of these people about this type of stuff. But it's not that revelation continues to unfold, that like not everything was revealed and then we get to end of the 20th century, and that's when Hashem reveals the godless of this ism and then this ism, and then now we're realizing this part. And that, it's not that Hashem held back. Everything was ultimately, all the potential for authentic interpretation was introduced already at Mamed Har Sinai. And the role of Chazal is to reveal that, to bring that into the world, not to just figure it out that it's imprinted and it's there, but to be mechadesh it, but that koach achidush, that ability, that capacity, that already has its origins in Sinai. So the Megillah, which is the prototypical din derabanan, right? Or divrei Kabbalah, Megillah is clearly, even though Esther min haTorah minayin, right, and Haman min haTorah minayin, but nevertheless, Megillah is not one of our chagim, that's on Doraisa, it's not one of our regalim, but the Megillah, that whole capacity, the whole ability for Chazal to establish a chag, that whole system has its origins in Sinai. And that's a very important idea, the interface between Dinei Derabanan and Dinei Doraisa, that Dinei Derabanan are not inventions of the rabbis. Okay, here we go. Hakol Ksherin Likrosis HaMegillah, everybody could read the Megillah, not just Yitz. Chutz, except Mecheresh Shota V'Katon. Except for someone who is deaf, someone who is a Shota, someone who is compromised cognitively, V'Katon, and someone who is a minor. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir V'Katon. Rabbi Yehuda says the Katon can read the Megillah. So here we go. You ready? Man tana cheresh divi eved nami lo. So there's a little bit of cheshbon here. So stay with me. We're almost done. Stay with me. Hakol ksherin likros es haMegillah chutz mecheresh. So the Mishnah said everyone can read the Megillah except for a cheresh. So the Gemara initially assumes that what does this mean? That a cheresh cannot read it at all. Cheresh divi eved nami lo. Even bidi eved. So if a deaf person were to read the Megillah, one would not be Yotze, even Bidi Eved. Amar Rav Masna, says Rav Masna, Rabbi Yotze, This is the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is the author of our Mishnah, he's our Tanakama, who says a Cheresh cannot read the Megillah, even b'diavad. It's not. How do we know this? Because we have a Mishnah. The Mishnah has a Tanakama. Akoreis, a Shema v'lo Yishmiel Yars. No. You read the Shema and you can't hear what you're saying. So says the Gemara, Yotza your Yotze. There's a Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Omer lo Yotza. You have to hear what you're saying. So what does that tell you? That tells you that Rabbi Yossi holds that if you don't hear what you're saying, you're not Yotze the mitzvah, even b'diavad, presumably. If it's true about Kriya Shema, which is Din Doraisa, it's probably true about Megillah. Mm-hmm. Hence, Rabbi Yossi is the author of our Reisha, the author of our Tanakama, that one cannot read a Megillah, even b'diavad. Umemad Rabbi Yossi, he b'diavad. How do you know the author of this Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi, and it's talking about b'diavad namilo? Maybe the author of this Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda holds that akol sherim likros as hamigila chutz mecheresh. That means lecharchila the cheresh cannot read the Megillah. Ha b'diavad shapir dami, but b'diavad he can read the Megillah. Oh, so the Gemara says lo so kadaitach. You can't consider that as a reasonable attribution of authorship to our Mishnah. To say that our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda, and when it says chutz mecheresh, it only means lecharchila. But b'diavad, it's okay. Why? Diktani cheresh tum yudashota b'katan. Because the three are grouped together. A cheresh, a shota, and a katan. Ma shota b'katan diviyeved nami lo. Just like a shota and a katan. Is not allowed to do it even b'diavad. So av cheresh diviyeved nami lo. So the cheresh is also b'diavad, not allowed to do it. So if the cheresh is not allowed to do it, the author cannot be Rabbi Yossi, right? Who says the author cannot be? Sorry, Rabbi Yehuda, right? I feel cheresh nami diviyeved nami lo. So the Gemara says, so it cannot be Rabbi Yehuda, cannot be Rabbi Yehuda, because the cheresh should be in the same bucket as the other two. Who says that a cheresh that can't hear is not Yossi something even b'diavad? That's Rabbi Yossi. So we're out with Rabbi Yehuda. The Dilma Hakadisa, the Hakadisa. So maybe you want to say that, no. Why do you say they all have to be the same? Maybe the Mishnah, maybe the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, maybe the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda is that the cheresh is really only Aser b'diavad. And the is really only Aser b'diavad. The Hachila, it's okay. And the Shota v'Katan are Aser even b'diavad. And the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, hello. Why don't you read the next word? Midiktani Sefer Rabbi Yehuda Machshir B'Katan. The fact that the Sefer says Rabbi Yehuda's Machshir B'Katan Michlau De Reisha Lav Rabbi Yehuda. So how could you stick in Rabbi Yehuda to the Reisha? So that means that it must be the Reisha's Rabbi Yossi, and therefore it's even B'Diavad that it doesn't work. V'Dilma Kulo Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says no, maybe the whole thing's Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, how is that possible? Mi dami reisha lepsula v'sefer l'ksheira. How could you say that in the reisha it sounds like a katan is pasul, and in the sefer Rabbi Yehuda is saying that it's kosher? So the Gemara says, v'dilma kula Rabbi Yehuda hi v'tshrei gavni katan k'tani. V'tshrei gavni katan. It's all Rabbi Yehuda, and we're discussing two different types of katans, right? V'chasuri mechsura. The Mishnah is missing a few words. V'hachi k'tani, and this is how you read it. Hakol sherin likros as haMegillah. Everybody is kosher to read the Megillah. Chutz mecheresh shota v'katan, except for a cheresh shota v'katan, meaning a cheresh lechachila, but b'diavad it's okay, and a shota even b'diavad, and the katan even b'diavad. But what kind of katan are we talking about? B'medvar ma'amurim b'katan shelo higia lechinuch. We're talking about a katan that has not achieved the age of chinuch, 9 or 10 years old, right? Where or big machlokas, how we establish the age of chinuch relative to the mitzvos, relative to the child, relative a standard. But a katan that does reach the age of chinuch, afilu lecharchila, even lecharchila can be motzi a gadol. Rabbi Yehuda machshir bekatan, because Rabbi Yehuda says a katan is kosher. Lechachila, assuming there, higia lechinuch. B'mayu kimta ki Rabbi Yehuda. B'mayu kimta. Who did you establish the Mishnah like now? Ki Rabbi Yehuda. You establish like Rabbi Yehuda. V'bidiyevet. And you're assuming that it's bidiyevet, meaning lecharchila, it's mutter. Bidiyevet, if you can't hear, it's aser. So, Ela ha detani, Rabbi Yehuda Breid, Rabbi Shimon Pazi. But how is that possible? We have this Mishnah. That a cheresh hamedaber beinu shomeya, a cheresh that could speak but can't hear, toreim lecharchila, can take truma lecharchila, even though they have to make a bracha. So mani, who does that follow? I Rabbi Huda, if it follows Rabbi Huda, the eved in lecharchila lo. Rabbi Huda is of the opinion that if a person does can't hear, they could do these mitzvos b'dieved, but not lecharchila. He is the author of our Mishnah, and he's the author of that beginning of that, of that Kriya Shema Mishnah. E Rabbi Yossi, if you want to say, no, it follows Rabbi Yossi, Di'eved Namilo. He says, you can't do it B'di'eved. So the Elamai Rabbi Yehuda, must be Rabbi Yehuda, Afilu Lichachila, and it's true, even Lichachila. Elamai Rabbi Yehuda, must follow Rabbi Yehuda, Afilu Lichachila, that it's mutter, if you can't hear, and therefore, we're back to the author of our Mishnah being Rabbi Yossi. Now the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says even b'di'eved, and the Mishnah is talking about even b'di'eved. Why is the Mishnah group a chere shota v'katan together? Right, that's a little jarring for us to hear in contemporary world. You say someone who can't hear is comparable to someone who has no das and someone who's a katan. So the poskim writes, right? So what is the status of a cheresh bizman hazeh? What's the status of someone who's deaf bizman hazeh? In the times of Chazal, someone who was deaf was patur from mitzvos. Why are they patur from mitzvos? They're patur from mitzvos because the assumption is that if you can't hear, you can't possibly. The assumption is that if you can't hear, then you cannot learn anything. If you can't learn anything, then you go through life cognitively incapacitated. You can't learn to speak, and you can't learn to process things, you can't learn to understand things, and so therefore, there's no education. There's no education, you're no different than somebody who's...
Well, they couldn't communicate.
Exactly, right. So you can't learn anything, you can't incorporate anything, you can't process anything, and so you certainly can't learn to speak, and so there's nothing to talk about. So what about Bizman Hazeh, where the, now, if somebody is a Shomeya, but they're an Eino Medaber, then the assumption is that they do have Das, right? Because they can hear, they can process things, they just can't speak, they can't do anything that requires speech, but they're not Potter for Mitzvos. So they're considered like a Pikeach for Mitzvos, that they can do. So what about Bizman Hazeh, where someone who cannot hear absolutely could be educated. It could be educated as good as any of us. They could become a professor in Harvard, someone who can't hear. Between special schools for people who can't hear and sign language and all sorts of other things. So what's the din? In particular, what's the din with a cheresh that is able to learn to speak? And what's the din with a cheresh that can have their hearing addressed mechanically or technologically? So what are the dinim? So Rav Moshe, it's very interesting. Rav Moshe has a number of different tshuvos. Actually, this is a tshuva where he writes at the beginning. He writes the tshuva to Rabbi Tendler, and he writes, Kashali l'sadr tshuva l'halacha ka'es, machmas chulshas briusi. I'm very sick. I can't really write tshuvas. Hashem shav rachmanes ami b'sof shar chole Yisrael. But because of the chashivas inyan zeh, that it affects a lot of people, I strengthened myself, and I'm writing you this tshuva about what we consider a cheresh to be. So Rav Moshe holds that if somebody is born a cheresh, and then they get hearing aids, and their hearing is corrected, so then they should be considered like a pikeach. They should be considered like somebody who is able to process things. But Rav Moshe splits his psak in a very interesting way, and it's a difficult psak to understand relative to other tshuvas that he has on the topic. But Rav Moshe writes, there's a difference between saying that someone is... Rav Moshe says he's like a pikeach because he's like someone who can speak. He's like a medaber. So we treat him like a pikeach. But we don't necessarily, in all areas of halacha, treat him like a shomeya, right? And that's what the tshuva from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach also basically discusses, that mitzvos that require shemiya specifically, Rav Shlomo Zalman holds, may not necessarily be fulfilled if the only way you can hear is through technology. And here there's a tremendous development in the tshuvas, because it's clear that the earlier tshuvas understood microphones, the technology for microphones and hearing aids are the same, and understood microphones differently or incompletely than the tshuvas later. And that really ended up sending things more in the direction of lechumrah. Because the original tshuvas understood that the amplification process was somehow taking the original call of the person and making the actual call louder. Later, when Rav Shlomo Zalman goes through the tshuva and goes through all the technology in the tshuva, he explains that that's not what it does. The microphone transforms the call into electrical impulses, and then the amplifier then interprets those electrical impulses and reconstructs them as the voice of the person. There's no question that when you're hearing the amplification, you're not hearing the original voice of the person. You're hearing a reconstructed voice of the person. Technology is so good now. It sounds exactly like the person. It sounds better than the person often, right? But it isn't the voice of the person. And that's why in many halachos where we require an actual voice, there's a lot of discussion. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about the microphones from Megillah reading. I grew up in a shul. We used to use a microphone for Megillah. But that's become much less common. You'll see sometimes at a wedding, the later tshuvas of Rav Moshe, we're not so into that. If sometimes you'll see at a wedding that the rabbi will pull the microphone a little bit away for the brachos, or certainly for the harei at. Part of that is this this desire to make like weddings like a super secret ceremony that no one who's actually sitting there can relate to or understand or appreciate, and just yell at them not to be on their cell phones. But but part of that is because there's a lot of basis to that, because they want to make sure that the Edim and the Kala and everybody doesn't only hear the amplification, also hears the original voice itself. So that becomes a big discussion. So when you have the mitzvah of Shmia, so do you fulfill the mitzvah the same way if you're hearing something that's been reprocessed? And so therefore, there are poskim... there are poskim that are uncomfortable. Let's say you have somebody who can't hear, right, but is able to speak, and they want to read Megillah for other people. So there's a lot of discussion whether or not that's okay or not okay, because Megillah has an extra dimension to it, which is, it's not just that there's a mitzvah of Kriya, but there's also a mitzvah of Parsumei Nisa, which means that the person who's reading may have to be able to hear what it is that they are saying. So there's a lot of discussion exactly what this is. But then there's a Tzitz Eliezer who seems to feel that this whole discussion is ridiculous. That bizman hazeh, people who are deaf are kipikeach l'chol davar, because they're a bar das like everybody else, and there's not even. But there are interesting. It's an interesting discussion how categories that were, everybody holds that the original categories are not necessarily the way in which we relate to it today. Everybody holds that this has changed. That, you know, when you look at the tshuvas from Rav Moshe and from Shlomo Zalman and Tzitzelia, everybody holds that we don't relate to it exactly the way they related it to in Chazal, because, exactly for this reason, because it's clear from the way the Mishnah groups them that it wasn't like a psul begufro. It wasn't that there's something wrong with someone who can't hear, like you need hearing in order to do mitzvahs. It's that the hearing rendered them unable to communicate and process and learn and understand. And now that they can process and learn and understand, they should do as many mitzvahs as they can do within their ability. The mitzvahs that are beyond their ability, onus rachmana patre, and there's a can have a blind person read a sefer Torah, because there's a mitzvah to read the words. This mitzvah to see the words.
So yeah. A deaf person without hearing aids.
Be My Eyes. You know about that app? You on that app?
No.
Oh, it's the coolest app in the world. It's an app called Be My Eyes. It's hard to get chosen because there's so many more volunteers. But basically what it is you download the app to your phone. And there are millions of people on the app. Some of the people are blind and some of the people can see. If a blind person is in their house and they can't, and they want to get a Diet Coke from the fridge, so they go on the app, and your phone rings, and they hold up their phone, wow, to the fridge, and you tell them where the soda is. So like if they drop an earring, or if they want to pick out a dress, or if they're trying to cook something, whatever, you have people from all over the world guiding, you have to have the same language, guiding other people to whatever, you know, work that into your rant of how terrible technology is.
Wouldn't it be more surprising than the death? Wouldn't you say that the katan is the more the surprising grouping into these?
The katan shi'igia l'chinuch, you're saying.
Right, I'm saying, yeah.
The katan shi'igia l'chinuch can't do it even b'di'evet.
Right.
The katan shi'igia l'chinuch, it is surprising. It's because a katan, so here's the zach. Why is that? Because a katan shi'igia l'chinuch is your chayiv in mitzvos midirabon, and you and I are also chayiv in mitzvos midirabon, and so therefore, you know, anybody who has the same chiyuv as somebody else, in theory, can be motzi somebody. So well, I don't think we do this, but it's it gets very exciting when we bring the women into the conversation. But I don't think that we're going to deal with in this gemara, because there's a big machlokas rishonim if women are chayiv. In Kodesh HaMegillah, as a Bahag, in the same way as men, can a woman, how do we paskin, can a woman be motzi a man, can a woman be motzi other women, you know, and that, we're saved by the bell, so we don't have to, we don't have to get into that today, but that doc will get to Rabbi Palmer. I'll take the one on the drink in. All right, Chicago.
For the sign of Maria.